Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is the author, Adriana Arora. Adriana is the author behind the Dreamer series, which is one of my favorite 2019 romance series that features Afro-Latino queer characters with a beautiful happily ever after. Her latest book, American Love Story, comes out next week on October 7th, 2019. In this episode, we chat about her writing process, we dive into her series, and finally, a round of book recommendations. Now let's get to the show. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Thank you, Adriana, for being in the show.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, let's see. I'm Dominican. I came from the Dominican Republic when I was in my early 20s. Okay. And I've been in the U.S. since then. I write contemporary romance, mostly centering Afro-Latinx characters. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like why I came into the romance space, to write what I felt was a need of needing a little bit more of like nuanced Latinx representation. So that's what I do.
I love it. And I love that you're writing Afro-Latino Caribbean characters, because I'm from Puerto Rico and I read a lot of romance and I don't see a lot of it. I don't see my experience being written down in books. So your books actually reflect my experience, and that's what excites me about your books.
Right. I think that for me also was a big motivator. I have also been a lifelong romance reader. I discovered romance like in my, you know, like middle grade years, and I've been reading it since. And I like, the more I read and I kind of like went out of it and came back to it at different times of my life, and it was always kind of like this like gaping hole I felt in the genre that I could read things I could relate to, of course, and things that were emotional and amazing, but I didn't see my own lived experience like mirrored in those stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't see it that often. I read a lot of Latinx based books, but they're based on Central America, Mexico, South America, and not a lot of Caribbean, even though we're a large population within the U.S. So it's kind of interesting to see there's not a lot of representation within the books, and yet we are a large representation here in the U.S.
Yes, exactly. And to me, that's kind of like to be frank, like, I only really seriously started, I'm a social worker, that's my profession, so I've writing was something that I kind of like only started doing seriously recently, like in the last couple of years. And the big motivator for me was like the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. I felt really compelled after, you know, hearing the narrative around the place of immigrants in this country to write stories that were of people thriving and striving, like the stories that we know are there of like who we are and the value that we bring to this country. And specifically queer communities of color, like I just felt really compelled to write stories that showed like the African Latinx world and the lives that we are living, not the lives that people are like putting into the narrative that's like really like based on like stereotypes and harmful like assumptions of like who we are and how we live. So that was a big motivator for me, and I think that's why I try to be intentional about kind of like showing as many shades of the Latinx experience as I can, because as you said, like when we think like Latinx stories in fiction, it's a lot more Sofia Vergara than it is Amara La Negra, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to bring into the space, like, there is, you know, a very wide spectrum of what Latinx is, and one experience does not fit all. Mm-hmm. It is very different to be Argentinian than to be Haitian, or mm-hmm. to be Puerto Rican Black or Cuban Black, than it is to be, you know, someone that is claiming or centered in their Spanish descendants, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, I wanted to really explore those things. And also, like, it's very different to be born and raised in New York City and be Puerto Rican than it is to be born and raised in the island and come here mm-hmm. as an adult. It's very, I mean, you know that, right? So it's,
yes.
it's kind of like bringing in that incredibly rich diversity that is in the Latinx experience. And I don't think, you know, publishing has really gotten that or even like really started to unpack, especially mm-hmm. in romance fiction. I feel like there's a real need for it.
Yeah, there really is a need for it. I think there's just not enough. And I think, I hope that with bringing more books in this world, that just the more readers are finding them out, they start to discover that the nuances of the different communities, the expectations, experiences, that the stories that they're writing are, you know, beautiful, and that there are actually, you can learn something from it. Because I think that's what we read. We read to learn. We read to discover new experiences, to read to, you know, to experience new experiences.
Yep. Yeah. And to really find the common, like, universal themes that affect us all, and also be able to kind of like read it from a space that's not centering your own experience, and seeing that like we all have some many, many basic things in common. I feel like that to me is also important. And I'm in my books, like, my books are Black and brown worlds. Mm-hmm. And when I read romance, I feel like you're going into a space where a Black person, a Latinx person, is like the element that's like, you know, one of the things is not like the other type of thing, you know, mm-hmm. like we're there, but we're not the world. Mm-hmm. And in my books, the Latinx person is the world. And even the white characters that I bring in there, like as protagonists, like Jude, for example, an American Dreamer, is fluent in Spanish, has lived in Latin America. He understands the beauty of our culture even before he met Nesto. And there are people like that. And that's something that I really want to get at, you know, like there is a beauty in us that other people can see too. And so, yeah, that's where I'm writing from, I guess.
I love it. And I love that you're writing. I want to keep reading your books. You're one of my autobiography authors, just for the fact that they're great romance, but they're also, they just reflect my story. And I think, you know, I don't see that often. And for me, that's a really, really beautiful thing to witness.
Well, thank you.
So you're a published author of multiple books. What was your journey to get your first book published?
So like I said earlier, I kind of started writing right after the election. I wanted to write, I actually started writing a book that's set in Ethiopia. I lived in Ethiopia for 5 years.
Ooh.
I was a humanitarian relief worker there. I worked in gender-based violence and programming and HIV/AIDS education and programming. So mm-hmm. I live there. I love it. I consider it my second homeland. Mm-hmm. And I started writing a book set there, and then the election happened, and I really felt compelled to write something that was set here and was mm-hmm. coming from like the experience of the Afro-Latino in New York City. And mm-hmm. so that's where I started writing American Dreamer. I wrote it early 2017, and I, you know, I just kind of like put it out there. So people tell me that my journey to being published was really fast. It was basically my first book, and I was able to get an agent, and my agent and I worked together, and we put it out for submission, and we were able to get it published with Karina Press, which is an imprint from Harlequin. So that was kind of like where I went. Along the way, I joined the Romance Writers of America New York City chapter, which is an amazing community and has been like a really big piece of like kind of like my writing journey and how I've like approached my career. So
I really love the journey that you have, that you were inspired to write and then you were able to get it published and you get multiple books published, which is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Dreamer series, which American Dreamer is the first one, is a 4-book series. And so it's that, like the premise is that it's 4 best friends who are all Afro-Latinx and grew up together in the South Bronx in New York City. So it's Nesto, it's the first one of the Dreamers, and he is Dominican. The second is American Fairy Tale, which I think you read first, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, and so that one is Camilo, and he's a Cuban-Jamaican social worker. The third one is coming out in October, American Love Story, and it's Patrice, who's Haitian. And the last one is Juan Pablo, who's Puerto Rican.
Oh my gosh.
And that's American Sweetheart. Yeah.
I can't wait to read American Sweetheart. just curious to hear the story. I think he seems to be like a funny character throughout the books. Like he seems to be kind of like, I'm curious to see how that's going to unravel.
Yeah. And that one is Priscilla is bisexual, but it's NMF. It's a woman and a man couple, as opposed to the first 3 books, which are gay couples.
Yeah, I love it. I was curious to see if it was going to be Priscilla. So you just answered the question.
Yes, so. It is. I'm writing it right now.
Yay! So let's talk about your writing. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads you?
I do. I would say I'm a plotter. Like I'm a plotter and a panter, which is kind of just like I go with it. But I definitely plan out my books. I use templates. Actually, there's a woman named Lisa Crone, and she has this book called Story Genius. And she has like a very specific template of how you kind of like flesh out a scene and how you develop a story. So I usually go by her template and I plan out what I'm going to write. I do a lot of like pre-planning and pre-writing. And then, but once I start, like I am flexible and I let kind of things go where they need to go. Like with American Sweethearts, which is the last book of the Dreamers, I've had to do that a lot because it's like I'm trying to do a lot of things since it's the last book in the series. And so like before I talked to you today, I was talking to my editor because we were kind of like figuring out what I need to do kind of like in the last third of the book to make it work. So I kind of go with it, but I really do kind of like start with like a master plan.
I like that. I like you have you take a little bit of both and you make it your own.
Yeah, and each project is so different. So every book is so different. So the journey also kind of can be really different once you kind of start writing. Even though if I start basically in the same way with each book, like how it unfolds, it always is different.
I love it. How do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of your ideas, inspirations, and characters?
So when I'm writing, I usually have a notebook for each book that I write. And so I'm usually kind of like tracking ideas or thoughts. I do a lot on my notes app on my phone. Like if I have something that occurs to me, like, ooh, this could be something that could help me with that scene that's not really working, I'll do it. And then I have like a big file with ideas for future projects. I mean, I have projects and ideas and plans for books that could get me through like the next 4 years. I have a lot of ideas. So I just keep it kind of, if I have a new idea of something that I'm like, oh, this could be an interesting story, I kind of go in and create like a little word file and I, you know, do a little brainstorming and I keep it there for when I have time to come back and really kind of like develop the idea.
I love it. So do you share your work along the way when it's completed or do you wait until it's completed?
That really depends. Now that I'm like, I have a bigger writer community, I have some really close friends who, you know, we beta read for each other, or like if I have and I'm not, something's not working for me, I kind of like workshop it with them. Then I can kind of like send them stuff. But I usually try to get that draft done before I give it to someone else to read. Like I'll sit on a draft for like a year until I show it to my agent. I also have my agent, is able to give me editorial support. So she's the one that reads my draft first if I need help, and helps me out, kind of figure things out. Yeah.
I love it. In American Dreamer, we follow Nesta, a food truck chef and Jude, a librarian, and it's set in Ithaca. In the book, you incorporate the world of culture through the food, family, and language. How important was it that this book does why?
Oh, it was vital. It was the essence of the book to have Nestle's world and his culture be front and center. I mean, it was the book for me, really. And food specifically, A, because our food's amazing, and B, because I really want, I knew I wanted to kind of create this world or this series where I had the Afro-Latinx nationalities as like my character. So I knew I wanted to have a Dominican hero. I knew I wanted to have a Cuban hero. I knew I wanted to have a Puerto Rican hero. I knew I wanted to have a Haitian hero. And so even though our cultures are very similar, they're also very distinct. And, you know, some of us, like with Haiti, for example, we didn't even have the same colonizers, right? So I needed to find something that brought that all together, and like our food and our African roots felt like the most natural thing that I could kind of like come up with. And then that's where I came up with the idea of this Afro-Caribbean food truck, when I could really kind of dig into our culture and like the things that bring us together and all the ways that we're kind of different too. And I've always, you know, like this is the kind, I've always felt like food in particular has always been like a point of entry for immigrants in American life. Like even when our being here isn't super welcome, like our food's always good, right? So like I thought like kind of like a really like big way in which immigrants have found their way kind of into like the American consciousness has been food. So I thought it was a really interesting way to kind of like bring Ernesto into this uptown in upstate New York and kind of like establish himself.
I love the food references. I felt like I was like, yeah. I need to. It pushed me to actually cook my own Puerto Rican food, which was exciting. I don't do that often, and it was great. But the food references were like, I'm so hungry. I love that he merged, you know, the different cultures, and it brought it in a way that it was actually, that was accessible to, you know, the white America who were like, oh, I know burritos, but let me see what is actually inside the burrito that is actually nuanced with the different cultures, which was exciting.
Yeah. No, I think that, like, people have reacted so positively to the truck and the food. And, for example, like, one of the things that I wanted to do, because when we talk about Latinx food or Afro-Caribbean food, it's like, oh, tostones. But it's like, we have a lot more than just tostones. And like, even within like Haitian food, for example, which I think is probably my favorite food of Caribbean food. And we don't really hear as much about it. And like, I wanted people to know that like Haitian food is amazing. And so that's part of what I want. Like, I feel like that's part of what we do with our books, you know, like bringing in people into our lives and saying like, look, there's so much to us that you don't even know yet.
Yeah. So in American Fairy Tale, we follow Nesto's best friend, Milo, and he has a chance encounter with Tom, a billionaire, and the chemistry sizzles from page one. What do you enjoy writing about this couple?
I think it's part of what I said before, is that I like showing how nuanced the Afro-Latinx world is. So you have, for example, Tom, who is Dominican, born and raised there, came to the U.S., you know, as a college student, like at 18, and he's also white passing. So he's Dominican. Like, his primary identity is Dominican. He grew up there. He's 100% Dominican. And yet, he looks white. His name is Tom Hughes because his father is an American expat. Mm-hmm. So he's really, you know, his struggle is that the thing that gives him privilege, which is like the fact that he looks like a white man, also erases his Dominican identity and like what that looks like. And then you have Camilo, who's born and raised here and all, but is, you know, like feels the burden of the other because he is brown. Mm-hmm. And so like, it's the piece of being able to like dig in to how we can be Latinx, yeah, but like we have such a wide spectrum of experiences. Mm-hmm. So I really enjoyed being able to show that and you know, show things like the Marielitos, which are something like a lot of people have written to me saying like, I didn't know about the Marielitos. And like, that was like an important, you know, that was an important influx of and a very specific type of immigrant that came from Cuba. And it was like a moment in the Cuban diaspora in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people don't know about that. And it was something that I kind of wanted to highlight because our stories are so diverse. Like, there's so much to our diaspora that I don't think is in the consciousness.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I told you I really identify with Tom's experience because I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. I'm white passing because my family's from all over the world. And I came to the U.S. when I was 18. And, you know, I stayed. I live in New York and I'm not a billionaire. That's the only difference. But I could experience, you know, I understood his experience of being, you know, I'm from Puerto Rico. Like, I'm from the island. Like, I'm an American, but it's, you know, because I adopted different things, but it's not the full experience of who you are. So, and then, you know, even when I grew up in Puerto Rico, there's a diversity. It's not just Puerto Ricans who live there. Like, I grew up with Cuban, with Dominican, you know, with Haitian. Right. Like, there's a diversity within the experience that even though we're all from the same place, you know, our experiences are coming from, you know, from a diaspora, from a different experience. Like, they color our experiences.
Right, right. Yep. And I mean, I think that's also part of it too, like even exploring like colorism within our own communities, like in the Dominican Republic, there's a lot of internalized racism.
Oh, yeah.
And because of our colonizers and like our own culture, like we do feel that white is better and what that looks like. We deny our African roots, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like those are things that I wanted to explore in our books too, because it's not just educating the wider world, but educating ourselves and like really kind of like looking about our own prejudices as a community.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and that's, and I don't think that's just a Dominican thing. I think that's like a Puerto Rican thing. I think that's a Cuban thing. I think it's like something that people don't expect, that they just assume like, oh, you're just Puerto Rican, like everyone's the same. But the reality is there's racism within the island, and it's prevalent, and that's part of the experiences. And I think that's something that you're shedding light about it in the books, and it helps you see that is that, you know, we can come up with a better solution or something, but at the same time, that's our experiences are like.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So we have book three coming up this month. Tell us about Patrice's love story. What can we expect about this book?
So I'm calling this my Black Lives Matter romance, which we'll see how it goes over.
Okay.
So it's Patrice's story. So Patrice is a Haitian, and he's a, I believe, professor. He's a professor at Cornell University.
Mm-hmm.
He's an economist, and he is the other hero is Easton Archer, who is a prosecutor, and he's an assistant district attorney in Ithaca, New York. And so they have met and had like a very kind of like hot and heavy affair a year before, and kind of like Patrice kind of ghosted Easton. And so now that Patrice is back in Ithaca as a professor, things kind of pick up again for them. Mm-hmm. And the conflict is that as their relationship is beginning to kind of like flourish again, police stops begin to happen, targeting primarily Black and brown young men in in the town. And so the response of the law enforcement is disappointing for Patrice, who's an activist. And so it's exploring those complications of being in a relationship with someone who is a good person, but who has to really kind of rethink their privilege and understand their place in the world. And so it's a romance, absolutely a romance, but it's also kind of exploring those complexities of life in the U.S. right now, which is why I'm calling it, which is why I call it American Love Story, because I feel like it's, I don't know, kind of a look at the complications of living in the world right now and being a person of color and trying to thrive with all that's happening.
Yeah, I'm 10% in and I'm loving it. I love the whole idea of ghosting and then being like, oh, you're back. So I'm curious to see how it unravels. But I had a hint that it's going to be a Black Lives Matter book. I was like, this feels like it's going to, there's going to touch upon. So I'm excited to dive into it and to see the social aspect as well as the active, the social justice part of it.
Yeah. I'm glad you're enjoying it. So I'm very nervous about it. I'm like, oh my gosh, what did I do? Why am I like this? But I hope it goes over well. I really love that book. It was the hardest one I've had to write so far, and I really love it.
I can imagine. Well, I'm excited to finish reading it, and I'll let you know how I feel about it. So.
Okay.
Awesome. So now let's get to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share what with our audience what they should read next. So what is your favorite genre?
So I have many. I would say I read a lot. I'm like a, you know, more than 100 books a year person. I would say, but I mainly read, I read romance. I read nonfiction. I read some literary fiction, but I'm getting pickier of what I read because I feel like, just because, like, you know, making the book as sad as possible isn't, like, doesn't mean it's good. And I read poetry. I read a lot of poetry.
Awesome. So I know this is a hard question. So just tell us quite a few. Who are your favorite authors?
Oh, that's so hard. I don't know. Let me see. Right now, Elizabeth Acevedo, I love, Poetess, I think, is basically a perfect book. I've always loved Laura Esquivel. I love Michael Chabon. I love Evelyn Waugh from, like, Brit. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, of course. Romance, I love Sarah McLean. I love I have my friend Laquette is one of my favorite authors. She writes like amazing books. KJ Charles is a really good historical queer romance author that I really enjoy. Her books are amazing. Yeah, I could go on and on. Natalie Diaz is a poet that I love. I have Abraham Bergesi is also one of my favorites. So it's like I have many. Jane Austen. I can go on literally for days.
I love it. What are your top three favorite books of all time? If that's not, that's too much, you can sprinkle us with more recommendations. Or if you want to just, you know, focus on 2018, 2019, that's fine too.
I'll give you a few. And I'm going to, like, also add and put her back at the top of the list. My favorite author, I cannot believe I forgot her, but thank goodness I took notes. Edith Wharton is one of my favorite authors. I think she's, like, the most underrated American writer. And she was a feminist before feminism was a thing. And I think she is absolutely fantastic. I have a few books. I have Como Agua para Chocolate by Laura Esquivel. Age of Innocence by Edith Wharton, El Otoño del Patriarca by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. That's actually my favorite book of his. Cutting for Stone by Abraham Bergesi is like set in Ethiopia, and it's kind of historical, and it is an amazing. You want to know about the history of Ethiopia and Ethiopian life, like, and the immigrant experience and being in exile and diaspora, like, that book has everything. Let's see, The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon is one of my favorite books ever. The Poetess, like I said, by Elizabeth Acevedo, probably one of the best books I've read, like, ever. And yes, I could go on and on, but I'm gonna leave it there.
I love it. Yeah, I have The Poetex. I've been meaning to read it. I got a backlog of books that I need to read this month, but actually for the fall, I'm reading backlist, and that's one of the top of my list.
It is.
I heard great things. And I heard great things about her Fallout book, too. So.
Yes, With the Fire on High is lovely, and it's also a foodie book.
Yeah.
And also, honestly, The Poetex is just, like, literally a perfect book.
I can't wait to read. What has been one book that you read this year that you love?
I have many in my list. Thank goodness I wrote it down. Okay. The Bride Test by Helen Huang. I read that right when I came out, and I thought it was delightful.
Mm-hmm.
With the Fire and High by Elizabeth Acevedo. Foodie, amazing. Afro-Latina culture, like, oh my gosh, so good. In Tune by J.N. Welsh, it's like a romance. It's like about like the EDM like DJ scene, and like she writes like really great like black heroines, so that's super fun. Poetry, I read that mid last year, and I've reread it a few times since then. When My Brother Was an Aztec by Natalie Diaz. It's probably one of my favorite poetry collections that I've read, like, maybe in the last 10 years. It is heartbreaking, but it is so good. She's Native American, but I think also has, she's a Spanish speaker, so I don't know exactly what her background is. But When My Brother Was an Aztec, it is fantastic. And a nonfiction book that I read like in the summer last year, and I'm still thinking about, and I just heard it's going to be turned into a movie, is Killers of the Flower Moon by David Grann. It was like a story of like the case that like began the FBI. And it's like set in like Oklahoma, and it's around like this like Native American tribe where people are just like being killed off. I mean, it reads like very fast thriller, but it's all a true story. So that's like a really interesting book. And I'm reading the Lizzie Borden trial book right now that just came out, and that's kind of interesting.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'm going to check out a few of these books, especially the FBI one. That seems so interesting.
It is so good. It is so good. Killers of the Flower Moon. Excellent.
Awesome. So tell us where we can find you online.
You can find me mostly giving unsolicited opinions on Twitter. Okay. My handle is at LaAdriana Herrera. I'm also on my website, which is AdrianaHerreraRomance.com. And I'm on Instagram too. It's LaAdriana_Herrera. And that's mostly where I am. Yeah.
I love it. Thank you so much for being in the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on. It was really fun to talk to you today.
Thank you, Adriana, for a great interview. For show notes and a list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextpod.com. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another author interview. Have a great week.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always in the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.